Who are you?
Raul Wybera.
Jim Arrowwood.
J.P. Harvey.
What do you want?
To talk about the show Crusade with friends and fans.
Where are you going?
All the way through Crusade and then to the novels.
Who do you serve and who do you trust?
Babylon 5 fans everywhere.
This is still the Babylon Project podcast.
The year is 2020. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to our next thrilling episode of the Babylon Project podcast. This is your host, Raul Wybera, joined as always by my two good friends, Jim Arrowwood and J.P. Harvey. How are you guys tonight?
All right, doing pretty good.
Same here.
And I'm going to presume our lurking host is hovering in the background to keep us on the straight and narrow.
Apply the beatings as required.
Yeah, if you hear whips cracking, that's not from the episode. That's Troy. Speaking of episodes, Jim, what episode are we talking about tonight?
Well, we are up to episode 11 of Crusade, The Needs of Earth.
We're almost done with the series.
Yeah, we're getting pretty close.
You know, was it last week or the week before I was off when I said, you guys realize we're just three episodes or whatever from the end?
Mm-hmm.
And I was off by one because I didn't catch that in the box set that I have, the 13th episode is on its own little flap.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm counting away going, look at that. There's 12 of these episodes and... You know, I don't know what happened to the 13th one, but they're only 12. Nah, they're 13. So, shame on my bad math.
Well, you know, from another perspective, though, this isn't almost done with the series. We're just kind of starting the series, right, JP?
Season 6, you mean?
I know. I'll let you go ahead and give us a little technical info on this episode and how it falls.
Yes, indeed. So another one written by the man himself, JMS. This is the second, as I recall, of two that are directed by Mike Vihar. I called him V'ger last time. Sorry, you Trek fans. This one aired on the 18th of August, 1999. And then here's some more of the interesting... play order versus production order and such. This was produced first. This was the very first episode produced for the series. As we're seeing, it aired number 11. So that's quite a gap. And if Straczynski had his way, this would have been episode 2. So the one immediately following the premiere.
Well, so we're not really almost done with the series. We're just starting it.
In a weird way, we're just starting it.
Wow. This show got Firefly'd a few years before Firefly.
Yeah. So, thanks. Somebody set the precedent and then, you know, chaos followed. But
yep.
Yeah. So keep that in mind. You know, I know we will, but people who haven't seen this or researched this stuff out, they're going to be, again, disconnects. In the airing order, because this was supposed to be the second episode that we saw.
Right, and there were definitely a couple of items, aside from the continuing de-evolution, I guess is the right word, the de-evolution of Max back into a jerk, We actually have a couple reveals here that I kind of had to remind myself of that.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'll point them out as we hit it.
Cool.
So, yeah. Well, Jim, let's go ahead and get ourselves centered with a summary so we have some common ground to discuss.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
A ranger arrives on the Excalibur with information about someone who may have important information. The only problem is that in order to get that information, Gideon will be required to break laws and ethics to obtain it. He tells the ranger that he will do whatever it takes. The ranger also tells Gideon that the Alliance will disavow any knowledge of Gideon's actions in obtaining the information. Gideon is to go to Praxis 7 to rescue Nachok Var, a Nuradian that has a set of data crystals that may contain historical information useful in leading to a cure for the Drak plague. Var has been captured and imprisoned and awaits being transferred to the authorities from Nurada. Gideon arrives first and frees Var, who turns over the data crystals after learning that Earth has a rich culture. The Nuradian authorities arrive and demand Gideon turn Var and the crystals over immediately. When Gideon finds that he is outnumbered and outgunned by the Nuradians, he complies, but not before making copies of the crystals. Gideon is at first disappointed when he learns that the crystals only contained information about Nuradian literature and music, but later understands that it also contains a message of hope for Earth. Well, there it is.
Yeah. Actually, you know, that summary kind of makes it sound like almost a stock episode. But boy, when you watch it, you get, I was impressed by the amount of depth I saw in it. There's a lot of meat to the episode.
There is indeed.
Part of that.
I said there is indeed.
Yep. And going with that meat is, at least in my personal impression, a pretty solid guest cast.
Character files opened.
Here we go. We have guest starring Tony Amendola as Nachok Var.
I love that guy.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's been in Space Rangers, Space Above and Beyond, Star Trek Voyager, X-Files, Stargate SG-1, Terminator, The Sarah Chronicle, Chronicles, and Continuum.
And if you have not seen Continuum, you need to watch it, Jim.
I have. I watched it while it was running.
Yep.
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. I think it was a little too complicated for common audiences. It was quite a show.
Yeah, he had a pretty significant role in it, though.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Edward Kagame was great character. And I also remember him from Once Upon a Time.
Ah.
He played Geppetto.
I see. Well,
anyway.
Yeah. We had Bill Monday as Nix, who also appeared on Deep Space Nine and was in The Day the Earth Stood Still. Not the original one, but the more recent one. All right, and then under featuring, we have Mark Hendrickson as a patron, 18 episodes of Babylon 5 in his portfolio. We have Peter Welkin as Trulon, and that would have been the Ranger. And we had Tom Weiner as A Priori Flentok. I think I said that right.
Who really doesn't say much.
No, he just kind of whispers at Bill Monday every now and then. But that's politics, you know.
Yeah, but you know what the real irony is? First of all, the guy does have some good genre credit. I mean, things like Cowboy Bebop, Babel. But he's primarily a voice actor in a role where he doesn't say a word.
Yeah.
You look at his credits and it's just stacks and stacks of voice acting.
Yeah.
And not a word said in this one.
Mm.
Initiating plot analysis.
Anyway, with the opening, I can't help but wonder, are we going to end up with an explicit tag?
Oh my goodness.
Well, it starts with the seemingly more obnoxious than usual music.
Yeah.
That, you know, that what have we referred to that before as, like cheap 70s porn music or whatever.
But at least the music's appropriate this time.
Yeah, it is.
The impression that a person gets, though, is here's Gideon just sitting there sipping on a cup of coffee watching some weird porn, right? And it's like, is this what this guy does in his spare time?
Yeah.
And then Chambers walks in and he doesn't even bat an eye.
Nor does she.
Yeah.
They tilt their heads. Which kind of becomes a running gag.
The toll, clearly there's a toll that they have to pay, you know, based on being in deep space for so long or whatever.
I guess.
But then we find out what's actually up, right?
Right.
Yeah, finally.
So to speak.
I could have still done without it.
Go ahead and play it.
Well, there's something you don't see every day. Where'd you get this?
Mr. Eilerson said that he didn't have time to print up his latest report, so he gave it to me on data crystal. After I finished watching it, I forgot to turn it off, and I found this at the end. There's Snow White and the Seven Narns, Who's Your Little Pachmara, others. He must have recorded over an old data crystal without erasing it first.
And you're going to pull this out the very next time he gets snotty with us, aren't you?
No, that'd be far too easy. Leave it to me, Dr. Chambers. Given someone as repressed as our Mr. Eilerson, I can play this one out for days.
As a doctor, I have to say that's totally unrealistic. An alien life form like the Pachmara is not biologically equipped to interface with humans in that kind of...
It's an amazing thing, technology.
Moving right along.
Now, incidentally, this episode did have a strong sexual content tag on it when it aired.
It must have been a re-air, right? They didn't do that stuff back in the 1990s.
This was 99, so
yeah. Did we have those kind of content tags back then? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Well, this one got it.
Yeah. according to Straczynski, the reviewers thought there was a nip slip, and they and it got the tag on it. Yeah.
And we're devoting way more time to this part of the show than it's worth. Let's move along.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. To the Rangers.
Yes.
We
Rangers.
Got a Ranger leading. We got a lead from the Rangers again.
Yeah. Which makes sense, right? Because if we had seen this in the order intended, we would have learned just last episode that the Rangers are scouting for leads, and then the Excalibur follows up when it's appropriate.
They're kind of splitting their time whenever they're not having to do work for the Alliance, force the Alliance. They are following up on leads, and then they're filtering the leads to the Excalibur. Only in this case, instead of simply describing the lead, on a channel, he insists on a meeting, and mostly because to follow up on this lead is going to put them in violation of a whole lot of interstellar laws.
Yeah, so since when does the law matter in this universe? Never.
Right?
Only when the Alliance seems that it pretty much matters. Well, no, it matters when the Alliance can use it against the humans or the Narn or the Minbari or you know, any of the other
when it's in the script.
Major races. Yeah. So they're looking for one Nachak Var who has stolen all of his race's critical information. And apparently he's got it for sale to the highest bidder. There's no real specifics, but it seems that they consider it worth chasing down.
Well, who knows?
Yep. We don't know really why, but apparently there's some potential value in the context of curing the plague.
They think. You know, the like I said, there's no real specifics. There's just one small complication.
Yes.
He's already been captured, and he's basically in prison, and his government is already sending a ship to pick him up.
Oops. Yeah.
So now it's a race.
In order for the good guys to get a hold of this guy, they got to break him out of the who's gal.
Yeah. A basic snatch and grab.
Mm-hmm.
But it's outside of the Alliance, so they're not breaking any Alliance laws.
Okay.
It also means they're on their own, but...
They set this up making you think they were violating a lot of Alliance laws, but the real friction point isn't Alliance laws. It's that if they go snag this guy and something goes badly, the Alliance isn't going to... They're going to distance themselves from, hey, we didn't send them over there. We don't know why.
They'll disavow.
Yeah, because we learn, you know, very, very shortly in the episode that Praxis is outside of Alliance jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to go out there and muck around. It goes badly. They capture you or whatever. That's on you. The Alliance isn't going to back them up and say, well, they were there trying to, you know, save millions or billions of lives and do all this stuff. It's just they're off tether. So.
Mm-hmm.
But the setup for this is pretty cool. So they are, you know, I mentioned that it's a race, but, you know, kind of a neat thing. We got to get in there and get this guy if it's worth the risk. And we've got to do it now or his own people are going to get him back.
Mm-hmm. Well, and all this is based on a lot of assumptions that all this race's critical information is going to include science, technology, medicine, you know, useful information.
Right.
So we don't actually know what kind of information this guy is carrying.
And interestingly, we get a little bit of a friction between, you know, on the ethics of this, between Max and Dorina, of all people, which is one of the parts that doesn't match the earlier episode, that kind of warming that we'd seen between them. I'd say they're almost at a point of active dislike at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ethics, who cares? What difference does it make?
Wait, so Dorina's a thief.
Right.
A member of the Thieves Guild.
Right.
And the Excalibur and crew are going to steal a guy.
Right.
I thought there was supposed to be honor among thieves, or how does that saying go?
Something like that.
Is that what we're seeing here, is a breakdown in the honor system among the thieves? I say with a little tongue in cheek.
Are you suggesting that Max might as well be a thief himself?
Max
is an opportunist.
I mean, he's basically stealing dead culture's technology.
Yeah, more or less.
For profit. The big difference is Dorina's just not waiting for them to be dead yet.
Yep.
Well put.
Yeah, and I find it interesting that Max is the one who's taken a moral high ground here. Though Gideon is certainly stringing him along, and Dr. Chambers is absolutely enjoying being in on the joke, if you watch her face.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Max on this. He's saying it's just wrong to do all this. Not only is it wrong, but it's very dangerous. And, you know, he's arguing common sense is what he's talking about, but nobody's going to have it because we've got this carrot on a string out there that's promising all these yep. wonderful secrets and a possible cure.
Yeah. And this, you know, kind of goes into what we would have seen in what would have been the first episode when they are talking about what lines would he cross or wouldn't he cross in order to find a cure, in order to secure a cure.
Yeah. Well, he's already made it clear he will cross any lines he needs to.
Right. So they're heading to Praxis 9, which apparently, because of the semi-toxic environment, is in domed cities with controlled access, making it a little harder to get in and out. And, of course, the thief is going. She doesn't look too enthused about it, but she's going.
Mm-hmm. And we are intentionally going to break a half a dozen laws.
Mm-hmm. At least. Sounds like mm-hmm. probably a few more than that by the time they're done with it. But you were going to say something, JP?
Oh, it's just, you know, it was weird. She seemed reluctant, but she all but demanded to go.
Yep.
So, you know, you could see a setup here where there's going to be some issue with her and something, right? The planet. The people on the
right.
planet, the person they're trying to rescue, whatever. We don't know what it is yet, but she demands to go and then seems really apprehensive.
Well, she has a bit of a history with the planet. She does make that clear, at least.
Yes, as we quickly learn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a comfortable history.
So it's basically a two-man team. It's Jarena and Gideon.
Jarena is not a man.
Obviously.
Obviously, yes.
But he's actually doing it on an ethical reason. He's not going to ask someone to break those half a dozen laws if he's not willing to go down and do it himself.
Yeah, okay.
I guess the old setup, right? If it goes badly, then he can take the blame.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully deflecting that off his crew.
Well, this whole moral justification thing is a recurring theme throughout the entire episode, and there's a lot of ironies to it as well, especially when we get into the whole what is actually on the data crystals themselves.
Right.
So anyway, Gideon and Jarena, they land, and lo and behold, it seems that they've landed on CT Alpha 6.
No, this is CT Alpha 5. CT Alpha 6 exploded and laid the entire planet to waste, changing the orbit.
Ah! Okay. Does it not look like that, though? I mean, with the two suits struggling through the wind and the orange atmosphere?
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. The wind, the crap blowing around on that planet looks more realistic than it did in Wrath of Khan.
Ha! Well, you do have, 20 years of difference in time? 79 to 99, I think?
Yeah. So they invented real sand for...
Right. Or CGI. But, yeah. Jarena, well, we get a little bit of background thoughts from her with a few details.
Mm-hmm.
So when were you last here?
It was a while ago. Before my people were murdered by the Drak.
So you weren't there when it happened?
No, I was many places during that time. Some you know, some you don't. Some you'll never know.
What brought you here?
I was learning. To serve. We should go.
Yeah. Interesting thoughts.
Yeah, so she's been there before.
Yep.
Learning to serve. Interesting mm-hmm. phrase.
And one of the things that she has said a little earlier than that was interesting was the comment that you know, her and the four others that were with them had gotten about this far before they were killed.
Yeah.
And the way she says it, one of the things that caught me odd, and keep in mind, I was watching this one as someone who hadn't seen it before. What caught me as odd was it sounded almost like they were going away from the place, not into the place.
Yeah, kind of.
But they make it into the entrance without very much trouble at all. And she seems to have a little bit of problems pushing the buttons.
You know, my first thought was, well, you could slow down a little bit.
Yeah, because it's kind of like trying to fat thumb a cell phone with that touchpad. I guess their suits don't have pins or something, you know, in a little pocket flap.
Yeah.
Why would they put such a small panel on a door that is in a toxic atmosphere like that?
Who knows?
It's in the script.
Or if it's methane, I guess if there's natives that happen to be methane breathers, but yeah. Maybe. So what's she going to do? She's going to go ahead and just take the glove off and punch it in that way.
Now she needs to go fast. Very fast.
Who needs lungs anyway, right?
And the one thing we really learned from this is apparently whatever species that Darina is, they really stink at holding their breaths.
Yeah.
He pops the gloves off. She starts panting like a dog and punching numbers. It's like, really? Hold your breath.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if that was to accelerate the scene or what, but she looks like she starts to hold her breath, and then within just seconds, she's breathing. And it's like, well, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So
it created some drama, and she had to punch the buttons fast, and then we got to see, you know, on the surface what appears to be a last-minute success.
Mm-hmm. And my first impression of Praxis is, okay, this is just down below on steroids.
There you go. That's one way to look at it.
Well, except with a slave trade, apparently.
Yeah.
And you get the impression from the way she's rubbing her wrists in sympathy with the slaves that she might have been caught by them at some point, would seem.
Yeah, she seems to have mild PTSD at this point.
Yeah. I wonder if that's one of the things she doesn't want to talk about.
Could very well be.
So she wants a distraction so she can try and find some help to get directions, right?
Yep. And then we have kind of another Star Trek parallel. Gideon grabs the biggest, meanest-looking alien he can... Yep. And brings one up from the floor, and it doesn't even phase the guy.
And it's so funny that when you say that, because the thought that ran through my head was, and it's not in my notes, but I was going to bring it up, was, kick him in the kneecaps!
Kick him in the knee, there you go.
Yeah, nice distraction, though.
Yeah, but, painful.
Well, that too. So she puts a mark up that I presume fades fairly quickly. It's like, okay, some sort of thieves mark. Yeah, sure enough. Because there's someone there from the guild. She knew there had to be someone there because they seem to like these kind of places.
Yeah.
And he's able to give them some directions.
Yeah.
And they need another distraction.
Yeah, this time. Now, why is Gideon carrying Max's porn with him down to the planet on this mission? Would you explain this to me?
He forgot to take it out of his pocket? Maybe he didn't want to leave it laying around his office.
No, maybe there's no pockets in those bellhop suits.
Yeah. Fortunately, there was also the recording or playback system for the monitors right there by him, too, that he was able to recognize through the hidden panel. But it was a better distraction.
Yep.
We get another head tilt.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, it kind of became a running gag. It's like,
okay. Now the next thing is yes. Gideon and Darina, they head in deeper into the place, bypassing right. these four or five guys. Plus, Gideon leaves Max's porn behind in the machine. Didn't yep. that also yep. have reports with sensitive information on it too?
It did. He said it did.
So
because he came across the porn when he forgot to turn it off at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now we don't know. Maybe he copied the reports off and overwrote the reporty stuff and left the porn stuff right. But yeah, I thought it was a little bit of a hole.
If it's sensitive, that's kind of yeah. I mean, when I've got sensitive information, I tend to erase regularly. But we have almost a running theme through the series. Where's Darina?
Yep.
Yeah, she's on a little side mission of her own.
Yeah, a little more somber side mission, actually. It's kind of a counterbalance to some of the brevity.
Yeah, and we get another piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
Right after a small boom. We had a small boom.
Yeah. How do I put it? It sounds like everything's been a little too easy at this point because they grab the guy, they get out, and they're on their way to the pickup.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get that piece of info.
He's exhausted. We have to let him rest.
Well, thanks to that little stunt of yours, we'll be lucky to get off this rock before they can scramble fighters to come after us. What the hell were you thinking?
Those people were slaves on their way to being sold.
Well, that's unfortunate. But slavery is legal in this part of space. Why did we have to be the
Because
first
when I was stuck in that room waiting and praying for help, nobody did it for me.
Captain, we have a problem. Scanners have picked up a jump point opening in this sector. Silhouette looks like a warship.
Is it the Marauder?
Good chance.
So Darina was an item on the slave market.
Yep. And Gideon, very appropriately, I would say, backed down very quickly.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, it was way too easy. And now apparently the chase is on. Interestingly, well, you know, actually, let's do this another way. Let's go ahead and play the conversation with what's his name?
I have learned the words of many other races against the laws of my own people.
Good. Then if you just put those down.
I must hold them until I decide who is deserving to have them.
What does deserving have to do with it? We heard you planned to sell that information to the highest bidder.
Yes. I'm sure this is what you were told. But there is no price high enough for what is in here. When I find the right person, the right place, it will be given freely.
And are we the right people?
I do not know. Until I do, I will hold this.
So they're looking for, he's looking for someone deserving.
Yeah. So, and he's not, he doesn't have anything for sale. He's not looking nope. for money or the highest bidder. He's looking for someone that can appreciate what he has to offer.
Yep. And basically, I mean, it's describing it as his entire race's legacy, the most important knowledge and information they have.
Yeah. So what is it with all these morally superior races we keep running into in this show?
Yeah, I was about to say the Marauder want to resolve this peacefully. You know, that seems to be a common. Well, you know what? You look at Earth history. It's you see it over and over and over again. Most of our wars seem to happen over the idea of moral superiority.
Yeah. Well, in this case, you've got several ships against one ship, apparently, or, you know, whatever.
Several much smaller ships against one very large, heavily armed ship as well.
Yeah, that can only shoot one time.
Only off of its big gun.
Right.
Even the Death Star needs a little recharge time.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, it always seems like the guys that are the stronger ones in the stronger positions, we don't want to fight. We want to resolve this peacefully so we don't have to blow your butts up.
Now, interestingly, we get the ambassador leader who won't sully himself to speak with lesser beings with someone who is speaking for him. You know what? And I was sitting there wondering, is this going to end with boom chakalaka?
Yeah, let's not go there.
Well, go ahead and play the clip then.
I'm Captain Matthew Gideon of the Starship Excalibur.
This is a priori Flentek, First Counselor, Minister of Justice, Sanctioned Guardian.
I get it. And you are?
Nix, the translator. Like others of his station, a priori Flentek does not speak the words of other races for reasons of morality and intellectual purity.
Really? Tell your boss he's an ass.
I told him you are honored and deeply humbled to have a being of such high moral character aboard your ship.
Do you do this a lot? Lie to protect his ego?
All the time. It's politics and self-preservation.
Understood. So, let's talk.
Understand that we are the recognized legal authority on our world. This person you have taken on board your ship...
Allegedly
taken on board your ship, is a known criminal and a troublemaker. What he has taken would cause us great difficulty in the hands of the wrong people. You must turn them both over to us.
Assuming that this person is on board, and I'm not saying he is, what if I say no?
We are attempting to be merciful, but we will not allow him to leave this area alive. If that means destroying your ship and your crew, we will do so.
I might be willing to take that chance in a fair fight.
A fair fight is not what they have in mind, Captain.
Captain to the bridge. Captain to the bridge.
So we're not looking for a fair fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, not quite. What is that, five other ships? Or five total, I guess?
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder, considering what we've seen the Excalibur going up against in the past, how fair or unfair is it still? Though, honestly, you'd still want to, you know, you don't want needless loss of life, so...
Right.
Yeah, let's try for a peaceful resolution here.
Yeah.
And
which is very easy to say when you have the upper hand.
Yep. And Max is all for that peaceful resolution.
Yeah, he is.
Max.
He is in full jerk mode with a huge I told you so here.
Yep, the guy we love to hate.
Yeah, but you know, he does point out something interesting. Ethics and morality basically boil down to the math of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Save the guy or save the people back home. Do the math.
Yeah. Right. And you know, needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few and all that kind of thing coming up here. But, you know, does the math really work out? You know, So what if it was only 100 people that were going to die because of the plague? And, you know, or, you know, well, what is the lower limit? We got 10 million, maybe only 5 million die. We're okay with that, or 250?
And indeed, isn't that the question that Gideon's already been asked?
Yeah. So, you know, it's too bad that it seems to come down to math.
And, you know, Jim, based just going by what you had said, what you've said there, mm-hmm. it kind of makes me really curious. I would have liked to have seen this episode with the memory of war after this.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would have really given it a bit of a shift.
Yeah.
It puts him from this episode to the next in exactly, you know, the kind of dilemma that you were talking here. So, you know, it's like there was some clear questions that Straczynski was going to theme throughout at least this first season.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it, you know, and again, would have been interesting to see where it went.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, Natchok is up and about and snooping into things he probably has no business snooping into, because part of it was Dr. Chambers' logs, but what he was interested in is her playlists.
Yeah.
Digging for chamber music.
Oh.
Chambers music.
Yeah. Well, he found an album of Mozart, that's for sure.
Yeah, French Horn Concerto.
And he liked it.
And he liked
Among
it.
Other things.
Yep. The day was won by Mozart. The short of it is, after Gideon's explanations of the music, okay, I'm willing to go back. Mm-hmm. Just give me long enough for you to make a copy of all this data. So yeah. He gives them the full set of data crystals.
Yep.
And
because he was that moved by
Mozart.
Music.
Yeah. I thought
what was the question he asked? He goes, so one guy did all of this?
Yeah. Well, was all the music Mozart?
All everything there was Mozart.
It was all yeah, I thought so. I wasn't 100% sure, but and apparently by the time Mozart was Gideon's age, he'd been dead for 6 years. So
yeah,
quite young. I like that. Actually, that I love that turn of phrase.
Just as an aside, if you put all the music that Mozart composed in his short lifetime on CDs, you would still fill 108 CDs.
A CD is an obsolete format for music that has apparently, at least amongst music aficionados, has been replaced by much larger vinyl discs.
Oh, those big black CDs.
Right.
They're giant. How many songs do they hold?
Not as many. But at any rate.
Anyway. Yeah, it's a little odd about how they're taking the guy back. We get, and we've run into, you know, that little moral superiority thing, not wanting to be sullied by the criminal, but.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to send an automated ship to bring him back in.
Matheson buys the answer, but he distinctly looks unhappy.
Well, he as much as admitted he scanned this guy. Later on, he did. Him. Yeah.
Well, remember, it's not necessarily conscious scanning. Remember what we've heard from other telepaths before. Really strong emotion. You know, it's like shouting in your face. You can't really block some of that stuff out. But
Natchokvar knew he was doomed.
Yeah. We don't know at this point what Matheson was doing, because if this had aired in order, we don't know that Matheson's the telepath yet.
Hmm.
But
He does mention it in his monologue towards the end of the show, though.
Toward the end, yeah. And that was one of those things. This would have been the first reveal that Matheson's a teep.
Right. Probably would have caused one of those, what did he just say? You know, one of those people go, did he just say he's a telep?
Yep. Yep. However, the point at this part again is, well, gee, they just get on and fly off, and okay, that is just way too easy again.
Yep.
And let's play the clip with this.
I don't like this. It's too easy.
Yes. Did he tell you anything more about the data?
Just that it contained all the important knowledge of his race. I've got Dr. Chambers analyzing it now. Why would he want to go back when he knows there's going to be trouble? He seemed almost eager to get clear of us, to make sure that we'd get away.
Second shuttle is taking position. Launching.
Put me through to the second shuttle. I want to ask Nachuk a few questions.
Shuttle 2 is on autopilot, sir.
What? You mean there's no one else in there?
Yes, sir.
Didn't you tell me? Launch a fighter escort. Tell
him to powering up forward guns. Shuttle has been destroyed. Warships opening jump points. Shall we pursue?
No. No, take us away from here, Lieutenant. Anywhere, just take us away.
You know, that was sort of a weird finish to the main action.
Mm-hmm.
I will say I'm glad that the Marathi never occurred to them that Gideon or his people might not have made a copy of those crystals.
Yeah, then maybe they're not as smart as they think they are.
Yep. So speaking of those crystals, what about them? Which, it's odd that Chambers is doing the investigation rather than Max, but...
Well, she's a doctor and they're looking for...
Medical information. Makes perfect sense to me.
But that's not what she finds. Matter of fact, she doesn't find any science. She doesn't find any technology or medical knowledge or agricultural knowledge or any other kind of what one might call, well, what Gideon would call useful.
Useful.
Right.
What she does find are the fine arts. All of them.
Imagine that.
And apparently it wasn't a lot. Did you guys notice that? She has this archive of crystals that have, you know, 10,000 years or whatever of all of the things for this culture, supposedly. And in the span of whatever the time was between getting those crystals and right this moment, she listened to all of them? 10,000 years of history or whatever the big number?
I would say if it's data-based, you know, I would assume it's data-based or archived in some way. So if she's got a feel for what the archive is like, it's not, you know, run a high-speed search query. I've done stuff like that actually in the past. So I really didn't give that part a thought. But
that's a good point. It distracted me when that happened. But yeah, that makes sense, I guess. If they already know, have a way they can search that with confidence that the searches are searching for what they think they are. Then...
Right. I would assume, and like I said, just hit the engineer side of me. It's like you just format a query, you're doing a fast scan of the metadata and just sampling some of the stuff that looks like it might be interesting. But in addition to all of the fine arts, there was also a little message. And this is a little bit longer clip, but I think, For me, at least, it's an important enough clip to play in entirety.
A
Home and Notchak got on an empty shuttle. He must have known what they had in mind. So why did he do it? I've turned it every way I can. It doesn't make sense. What was on those crystals that was worth dying for just to get them to somebody else?
He didn't tell you?
No. Why? What's on there?
Music, poetry, songs. Stories going back centuries. The recorded creative output of an entire planet. Here. I found this, too.
Today, the final edict came down. The death warrant for everything we have built as a people. They are burning the books. They are burning the music, burning the art, tearing down the statues. Our leaders say that art is a waste of time, that art is decadent, subversive, indecent. They say we must become more competitive, more aggressive. That we cannot support the drain on our moral strength placed upon us by ideas that do not support the goals of the state. Stories and music that do not reinforce the will of the state. Art that does... erased it all from the planetary data net and burned all the copies in private hands. Nearly all. I have the last copy. I have it all. If I can escape, I will try to find someone somewhere who can appreciate what we have. What we had. Perhaps someday, my people will understand what they have lost and ask for it back. That hope is all that sustains me.
I've only had a chance to review a little of it, but what I've seen is beautiful, stunning, beyond anything I can describe.
Nothing useful, then?
No, nothing scientifically useful. But that's not the point. Advanced cultures sooner or later figure out that hydrogen is the most common element in the universe. They have different names for it, but it's the same thing. Science is a universal constant. It's there for anyone to discover as long as you can do the math. But you don't just discover Ode on a Grecian urn or Beethoven or Gauguin. When the last copy is burned, it's gone forever.
He threw away his life. Sarah, he said that it contained all the important knowledge of his race.
Then I guess it's a question of what you consider important, Captain.
Eilerson said it himself. We have to be focused on the needs of Earth.
And this does. Don't you understand? I've listened to it. The stories, the music, they're all about hope. Hope enough to inspire a dozen generations. We talk about the needs of Earth. Well, there's more to it than the obvious. While we're waiting on science to discover the math that will lead to a cure, we need something to sustain us. This is the music and the literature of hope. It's what we need. Another culture forgot that. We can't. Not now. Not ever.
I'll chart the next stop. We'll start looking again tomorrow. The Rangers say they have a lead on an alien medical research vessel spotted in Sector 200. Maybe we can find something.
Captain.
Good night, Doctor.
You know, Gideon seems to have forgotten what he had told Natchak just a few minutes, in our time at least, just a few minutes ago.
Yeah. And even after being told by a scientist how important the arts are, to culture and a society in general.
Yeah. Because the Marathi are a good example of what she was talking about. I mean, they had gone down the path of pretty much the ultimate cancel culture, which is one of the reasons I get so honked off about some of the stuff today as far as political correctness censoring the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually sort of one of a pet peeve of mine.
But of course, we've still got large number of peoples that think the government shouldn't support the arts, and the NEA should be done away with, and on and on and on, that, you know, but by golly, the government will build you a sports stadium.
Yep. How do I put it? You've heard me talk about this in the past. By background, I'm a scientist and an engineer. Mm-hmm. I've done clinical trials on most of the antiarrhythmic drugs that have come onto the market, some of the original statin drugs, did some of the pioneering work for defibrillators. And believe it or not, I had been involved in some of the research done on COVID-19, actually. My wife, on the other hand, is a professional musician, and she's picked up, the side of being a voiceover artist. And there were times back while I was doing those defibrillator clinical trials that she'd be a little get a little frustrated, not so much with me, but what I was doing and being considered by, I guess, some of the people in the California school districts as important, science, engineering, technology, math, whereas music, you just teach music. And that really would frost me, because the way I would put it to her was, think of it this way, Anthea. If it weren't for what you do, what I do wouldn't matter a damn bit. If you don't value those things, if you don't value that kind of creativity, then the rest of it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All of this episode, all of the moral crises were turned out to be over the arts. And keep in mind, the Marathi government was basically willing to risk a war, firing on another ship, another warship like that, to suppress it.
Mm-hmm.
So if nothing else, that's telling you that they've got a healthy level of fear for that art and music and literature.
Yeah. Well, after all, who is it that starts the revolutions?
Mm-hmm.
It's generally the ones that people from the outside that see what's going on inside and then start pointing it out to everybody. And that's usually people in literature.
The ones that can call a spade a spade.
Yeah.
And speaking of moral crises, we're not quite done with those yet, because Matheson is having his own moral crisis. And, I really wanted to pull that clip, but it was, just from a time perspective, it was either that clip or this one about the arts. And frankly, the one about the arts I thought was far more important. But
the one that Matheson's little conversation with himself, let's call it, was,
yep,
I think, more of a setup for things in the future.
Mm-hmm. I do think so, because this is where we get the first reveal of, or what would have been the first reveal of, his telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really key about that, and the gist of it was, he knew what was going on. The emotions were so high, he couldn't avoid it. And Netchak seemed to know that he knew, and everyone did what they did anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But Matheson's final comment about that was how odd to know everyone's heart but my own.
Yeah.
So I think you're absolutely right. This was setting up. Was it you or JP that said that this is setting up something in the future?
Jim said that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks.
Remember, Matheson is a he's young. He's a junior officer, and he's kind of outside the traditional teep lanes.
Right.
And, you know, we can compare him maybe to a Bester kind of guy who's older and crustier and more set in the ways of the telepaths. So this guy, younger, probably more emotional. He's, you know, without the mentorship of the staunch old guard. So it's not surprising that he wrestles with this at all, that, you know, it's not a practical thing he's doing. It's an emotional thing, right? Knowing everybody's heart but his own. But, you know, cool insights into a young telepath.
Yep. Yeah. And certainly he's still filled with all the idealism of youth, as you say.
Yep.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, and just thinking back, we got this first. And then we had the episode where, the ex-psychop comes to check on him.
I can't remember which episode that was. That makes a lot more sense, doesn't it? Knowing
suddenly it makes more sense. Yes.
It was really random in that episode. Well, you know, it's time and we do these assessments and you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of weird. Makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. This little bit of backstory. Only it would have been front story, I guess.
Right. And we kind of wrap up with Gideon. He's feeling a bit bad here. Kind of apologizes to Dr. Chambers. I guess he did remember what he told Datchak before. But the big reason for his earlier grumpiness is he simply does not like it when people die.
Yep.
And that brings out up something else that would have been the opening of a mystery, except by airing these, by TNT insisting on airing them out of order, a big part of that mystery is already solved. His old ship, the Cerberus, was destroyed and he was the sole survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And the big mystery part of this is she mentions it as an accident, and he's very clear it wasn't an accident.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, just to let you know, I did get his apology on here with...
Oh, great. In the last clip?
Yeah.
Well, great, because this will be the perfect time, because it goes immediately from there to Gideon and Dorina finishing the conversation. And this is exactly when to play that clip.
Thought I'd come by and pick up a little of that. Something easy on the ears. Something hopeful.
Here's a copy of what I was just listening to. Think it'll do. I guess we could all use a little hope from time to time.
I'm sorry I was short with you earlier. It's just the reason that they picked me for this job is that I have a thing about death. I don't like it when the people around me die. I've seen too much of it in my time.
Is this because of what happened on the Cerberus? You were just an ensign back then. There was nothing you could do.
347 officers and crew died aboard the Cerberus, Doctor. Many of them were my friends.
And because of that accident, now you take death personally?
No, not personally. And it wasn't.
Wasn't what?
Nothing. Good night, Doc.
Yes.
I was thinking about what happened down on Praxis 9, and I thought I'd stop by and see if you wanted to talk about it.
No, not really. So what was on the data crystals? More of Eilerson's special videos?
least according to Dr. Chambers. Here. Well, she...
It was my family. They, sold me into slavery to pay off their debts. Did what they had to do. It doesn't bother me. When do you want that back?
When you're done with it.
Yeah.
Better than the music that goes with the episode in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning the funky 70s music or whatever that is.
Yep.
Yeah.
But Darina was not captured. She was sold into slavery by her parents.
To pay off debt.
Ouch.
So there it is.
There it is. I was just going to say, Darina... In this episode, well, just in these whole, we've all were hard on the character and also at times on the actress at the very beginning. In the way that she, that I've said, this part of the series is a completely different show. Her character is not the same character. And the way it was written, I can understand why she had some problems acting, you know, carrying that character.
Mm-hmm.
If this is what it was originally written as, and then get your mind into that, and then just take that left turn that the character has before, you know, in the what was initially aired. Yeah, I could see why that would give her some grief. I can see why that role would give her some grief.
Yeah.
This really makes me want to know what would have happened with this character.
Yeah. No, I'm sure she'd have wound up becoming a hero. But how about what's coming up next? Would you like to know what's coming up next?
Yes. Actually, I would very much like to know what's coming up next.
On our next very exciting episode, we have a episode called Visitors from Down the Street, in which events take a lighthearted turn in this X-Files parody. Excalibur takes aboard a pair of paranoid aliens convinced that humans interfered with their planet for decades and that their government conspired to hide the facts. This gets stranger when one of their leaders shows up and reveals that his government is intentionally faking alien intervention to pacify a naturally rebellious population.
So is the truth out there?
And what? Not that it's a direct coupling to South Park, but isn't in South Park, didn't they refer to aliens as the visitors? So we're set up for chuckles.
Yep.
Oh yeah. It's supposed to be a funny episode. At any rate,
I'm gonna wait. I gotta wait and see how they're going to deal with the cigarette smoking man.
he's there. So did we have
seriously?
Yes. Did we have any boom? Do we have any boom today?
We had a little face boom in the bar.
Yeah, and we had some boom boom. We had some boom in the prison.
And then we had a shuttlecraft boom.
A shuttle boom.
Yeah, I think that counts as some boom today.
We had boom today. What about tomorrow? We going to have boom tomorrow?
Of course.
JP, why are we going to have boom tomorrow?
because there's always boom tomorrow.
Well,
you know,
there it is.
A question for you, Jim. How many episodes have we done now?
Well, this would be number 11.
Plus the other 122, 133 episodes.
Oh,
you would think you would think people would have figured out that there's always boom tomorrow.
That's just because we say so.
Ah, okay. It's one of those things you always have to prove. All righty. Well, with that, then, I think it's time to say goodnight, everybody.
Yep, it is. Say goodnight, JP.
Goodnight, JP.
So long, everybody.
See you later.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.